We are going to open up the House Special Committee on Budget, the Subcommittee on General Government, Transportation, Economic Development. This morning is Wednesday, June 22nd, 2005. We are going to open up the work session on House Bill 5164. Robin Lamont, our fiscal officer, went through House Bill 5164. Just very quickly, I want to bring up our new Director of Economic Development, Mr. Salzgiver. And just point out one item in the budget, and that's relating to the increased funding for small business development centers, and share with you the thought of the chair and of this committee that small business is an important component of the state of Oregon, and see if you've had a chance to at least look at that line item. Any thoughts on that line item?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Salzgiver with OECDD. Also with me is Cora Parker with DAS. I need to be babysat right now because I'm still actually not in the role yet. That'll be July 1st. Mr. Chairman, we have looked at that and we have reviewed that with the governor's office. Of course, as you know, in the governor's proposed budget is an amount roughly half that amount. I can tell you that small business development centers are an important part of our overall strategy, and the department does feel strongly about that. I think looking ahead, one of the challenges or one of the focuses we would have would be to make sure that all funds that are associated with those programs and, frankly, any others are just subject to strong performance requirements, and we would work with you on making sure that those are in place and developing them.
Perfect. Two other issues just very quickly before we look for a motion on this. I want to put on the record that we anticipate working with the department and with all of our colleagues in trying to reconcile House Bill 5164 with a Senate bill that will be coming over, and I think I can share on behalf of this committee the importance of arts and culture to the state of Oregon and the role it plays in the development of the state. I'd also like to point out the role ports play in the economic development of the state, and when we have another bill come over, I would hope that we as a group could collectively work to reconcile those two bills for the betterment of the state of Oregon. So I want to put that on the record.
Very well. So, Mr. Chairman, if I might, for the record, in phase one and phase two, we did hear loud and clear of the committee's interest in port development or port activities as an economic development tool. Certainly my experience, that goes way back in my professional career, I have a strong view about that. We've already commenced discussions with the ports community about how better to serve them, and we are bringing that conversation back to the governor's office, and we'll be happy to work with you as well on it.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Thank you. Any other thoughts or comments from the committee? Looking for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we approve House Bill 5164. Actually, we need to approve the LFO packages, correct? Recommendations?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is a technical matter. The essentials are to approve the Dash 1 amendments and then to move the amendments to the Dash 1 and then to move the amended bill to the full committee.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 5164.
Thank you. Representative Krupp moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 5164. Any discussion? Any dissension? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chairman, I move the amendments to the Dash 1 amendments for House Bill 5164.
Representative Krupp moves the amendments the Dash 1 amendments to
the motion is on the last page. It's approve the amendments to House Bill 5164-1.
Oh, there we go. To approve the amendments to House Bill 5164-1. Any discussion? Any dissension? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 5164 with the Dash 1 amendments amended to the full House Budget Committee with a new pass recommendation.
Representative Krupp moves House Bill 5164-1 as amended to the full House Budget Committee with a new pass recommendation. Any discussion? Very quickly, in the interest of good government and full disclosure, I need to put on the record that I have a potential conflict of interest as I have a significant financial interest in a company that does business with clients who do business with the state of Oregon. Any of my constituents who would like more information on this can go to my webpage, where I have a full and complete disclosure on any and all activity I do with all public sector entities. Any other discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 5164 is passed. We're going to...
I need a carrier.
I'll carry this one.
Okay.
We're going to close the work session on House Bill 5164. And very quickly, I'd like to also put on the record, Mr. Salzgiver, how pleased we are to have you in your position as interim temporary director of the Economic and Community Development Department. I have to tell you, from this chair's perspective, I'm ready and prepared to work closely with you to help develop the economy of the state of Oregon, and I look forward to working with you and all of our other partners to carry out the mission of the state of Oregon. So great. Welcome to your new job, and hopefully it'll be a long and fruitful career.
Thanks.
So have a great day.
Look forward to working
with you. Thank you. Okay, we are going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2107 relating to driving privileges. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2107 amends statutes related to school bus and hazardous materials, driver's license endorsements, and provisions related to the commercial driver's license dealing with disqualification, suspension, and driving under the influence of intoxicants to bring Oregon in compliance with federal law. And I placed in front of you the fiscal impact and the a staff measure summary on the bill. The fiscal impact is almost $132,000 for this biennium, is already accommodated in the governor's recommended budget and in the budget you passed out of this subcommittee.
All right. We have Robin and Tom on the witness registration list. Why don't we have ladies first? So
thanks.
Welcome, Robin.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Robin Freeman with the Department of Transportation. With me today is Tom McClellan. Tom is our Program Services Manager at DMV. I have handed out some testimony this morning, and I just wanted to cover what was in the packet. Along with my testimony is the is a section-by-section review that we did of the Angus version of the bill, and the House basically used this as a tool when they worked this bill. In addition, there's a letter to the governor from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, and this outlines the consequences of the department not conforming to these laws and rules. We received that in February. House Bill 2107 ANGROS brings Oregon into compliance with the Motor Carrier Safety Improvement Act and the USA Patriot Act of 2001. These federal laws will establish new requirements and standards for people that operate commercial motor vehicles. The Motor Carrier Safety Act was enacted primarily to reduce the number and severity of truck crashes and to improve the commercial driver's license program. Probably one of the most important elements of this legislation for the department is that the failure to bring Oregon into compliance with these federal regulations by September 30th of this year would result in decertification of our commercial driver's license program, and it would jeopardize funding from the federal aid highway funds and the motor carrier safety assistance program funds. And specifically, in my testimony, at risk is $2.7 million annually of motor carrier safety assistance funds, and $1.6 million of which is allocated to state police. In addition, Oregon would, if Oregon is non-compliant, 5% or $12.5 million of the annual federal aid highway funds would be withheld, and 10%, which is $25.2 million, would be withheld each of the following years until we became compliant with these laws and rules. This legislation basically impacts five areas or five components of the commercial driver's license program, and they're headlined in my testimony. And they would include school bus license endorsements, disqualification from holding a commercial driver's license, suspension of a commercial driver's license, and DUIs by a person with a commercial driver's license, and then hazmat endorsements. With school bus endorsement, license endorsements, Section 1 through 11 of the bill creates a new school bus endorsement with associated testing requirements, test fees, and issuance fees. This would establish a $21 issuance fee for school bus driver license endorsements, and this is for people that already hold a commercial driver's license. It adds a $10 fee for the school bus endorsement knowledge test that we will be issuing, and it requires a drive test for the school bus driver endorsement to be performed in an actual school bus. We currently have 6,500 bus drivers, and we will be having 900 new, we average about 900 new drivers every year. So a major component of this bill is the fact that once it passes, we will need to issue those endorsements, which means a knowledge test must be taken, and in some circumstances, a drive test if you're a new driver. And this must be completed by September 30th for anyone to be able to drive a bus. So we're under a crunch as far as testing.
Mr. Chair, a school bus or any passenger bus?
School bus.
School buses specifically?
Yes.
Okay.
Chair Smith.
Really quick, where does the testing occur?
Chair Smith, I believe that we're doing several locations across the state. We're working with the Office of Education, and Mr. McClellan could certainly correct me on that if it's not correct. We're trying to work with them to expedite this because we have so many people, such a short time. So we're setting up testing sites. We're doing some really flexible scheduling just to accommodate everyone by the state.
But the issue I would raise is I don't know what the salary schedule is for a bus driver, but I'm assuming it's not at the high end. And if the testing locations are 100, 150 miles away from our small rural communities, it may be difficult to. I guess I'm just curious, what's the solution to get someone who's not making a tremendous salary to get to these locations?
Chair Smith, I think I'll have Mr. McClellan.
If you could just introduce yourself for the record real quick.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom McClellan. I'm with Driver Motor Vehicle Services, DMV. We are doing knowledge tests, which is a new provision as part of this bill. We're starting to do those this summer, and we're providing those insights throughout the state, and the Department of Education is helping us coordinate the scheduling of those. For the other testing, we'll be doing those in our field offices, which are, I think there's 64 of them across the state. So access is really quite good.
So someone in Beaverton is not going to have to drive to Gresham,
right,
or to Salem to take a test.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Sections 12 through 19 deal with suspending a person's commercial driver's license for a conviction or implied consent action as listed in Section 13, sub 2, while operating any motor vehicle. If you've had time to review the bill, I'm sure you have. Section 13 has a laundry list, a pretty significant list of convictions, and that a lot of those convictions aren't new, but what is new to this is the fact that they don't just apply to your commercial driver's license record, but also to your personal driving record. So if you commit those offenses now in your own personal motor vehicle, then those apply towards a lifetime suspension of your commercial driver's license. Authority under this section is also given to suspend a person's right to apply for a commercial driver's license when one conviction is received while operating, basically driving a truck without a commercial driver's license.
Really quick, the lifetime suspension, that's a federal requirement that we're getting in line with?
Chair Smith, everything within this bill is a federal requirement. We have not exceeded their expectation or limited what they wanted us to do because of the consequences here. Sections 20 through 24 create changes to the commercial driver's license suspension and serious violation suspensions. The language here creates CDL suspensions for convictions, in any motor vehicle for failure to perform the duties of a driver involved in an accident and crimes punishable as felonies, and most of those are drug-related felonies are, a lot of those are drug-related charges. If a person does not have a commercial driver's license but is operating a commercial motor vehicle, then the convictions result in a suspension of that person's right to apply for a commercial driver's license. Specifically, Section 20 creates a new suspension when a person operates a commercial motor vehicle while he's already suspended or revoked. It creates a new immediate suspension based on notification from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration that that commercial driver's license holder is an imminent hazard. And it also creates the authority to allow a commercial driver's license suspension based on an out-of-state conviction or a notice of action in another state that is comparable to something in this state that would cause your driver's license to be suspended. Section 22 amends the definition of a serious traffic violation, and it adds reckless driving in a non-commercial motor vehicle, so in your own car or personal vehicle of someone's. And it adds operating a vehicle without driving privileges and failure to carry or present a license to police to the list of, violations. It also states that suspensions for these violations must be served consecutively, so they cannot be served concurrently. Thank you. for these serious traffic violations. Sections 25 through 29 identify the length of the CDL suspensions relating to implied consent and DUII. These sections include provisions for people that have a commercial driver's license operating their personal vehicle and those that do not have a commercial driver's license but are operating a commercial motor vehicle. These sections also define when the provisions take effect and when they revise the notice provided to people instead of arrested for DUII. In other words, the Miranda language will be changed to accommodate so that people can make informed decisions. Section 30 prohibits the court from deferring any entry of any judgment or to allow an individual to enter into a diversion program when they prevent a conviction of a traffic offense from appearing on the driver's license. So the federal government wants to have that clarity. If there's a conviction, then it needs to appear on the driver's license. And this includes a commercial driver's license holder driving a personal vehicle. Sections 31 through 36 give the department the authority to implement the USA Patriot Act of 2001. Specifically, this change prohibits the department from issuing or renewing a hazmat endorsement on a commercial driver's license until there has been a background check. And these background checks will be conducted by the Transportation Safety Administration. And the department will cancel any endorsement of any person that does not pass that background check.
Since the chairman's not here,
that would be you, Mr. Chair.
Robin, is there provisions within the Patriot Act that we're complying with in the 80s version of this bill that mandates that current CDL holders face a background check, or is this only for new applicants or renewal?
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, it would apply to only those folks currently holding a hazmat endorsement or if they want to apply for a hazmat endorsement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so again, if you currently have a hazardous materials endorsement on your CDL, you're going to get a background check.
Chair Krupp, yes.
Okay.
Right.
You have 180-day notice ahead of time.
Representative Bakken, any questions? Okay.
I'd summarize, but I'd be repeating myself, so I won't do that. I just want to thank the committee for hearing this bill and helping us expedite the processes that we have before us before September of 2005.
One question.
Yes.
The background checks are paid by who?
Chair Krupp, Representative Vakian. Those will be paid for by the commercial driver's license holder, and they are going to be paid directly to the Transportation Safety Administration. They'll be doing all of that work, issuing the reports and collecting the fingerprints, doing the background check.
And Robin, how are they going to accomplish that here? Will they contract with DMV for DMV employees to coalesce that information, or will it be a private contractor that will do all of that?
Okay. Representative Krupp, I think I'm going to let Mr. McClellan address that.
Representative Krupp, Yes, it's the latter. It's the private consultants. It's a company called IBT. We'll be conducting those fingerprint collection processes in locations around the state. They'll be sending the fingerprints to the FBI. When the results come back, those will go to the TSA, the Transportation Safety Administration. And then we'll be notified if there are any hits on that security check. And this bill would give us the authority to then take action on that information.
And who has the authority to choose who these private contractors are? Is it the state of Oregon or the federal government?
It actually is the federal government that makes that decision on who the company will be to do that.
This is a bill that no question we have got to pass out here today, and I'm completely supportive of everything that you're doing and presenting. One of the things that really concerns me, though, is the reach of the federal government into what has traditionally been a state governance issue. You know, we see it in public education to a huge extent. Now we're seeing it in the administration of our motor vehicle licensing and laws. And certainly we don't have to do this if we don't want to. We just forgo the federal money. I'm not so sure that when we're talking about states' rights issues that blackmail isn't an appropriate term to be used in the kind of influence the federal government is having over the autonomy of the states. And it just concerns me so deeply. I think you two are doing a terrific job of managing that, so it is not a criticism at all of your efforts. But it certainly is on those of our federal government.
These are, Representative, these are exactly the same discussions we have at the National Conference of State Legislatures, broadly amongst all committees, is the reach of the federal government, the carrot that they hand out to us in the form of money that we deem appropriate. Certainly MCSAP funds are. And when they threaten to pull back the carrot, we comply, because the carrot has become an integral part of our operation as a government. And the choices, it's very rare for government, state governments, to say no thank you to the federal government when it comes to money that comes to us on, in essence, an optional basis. But we argue about this all the time. And when it comes to the Patriot Act, the Real ID Act, which was recently passed by Congress and signed into law by the President, that issue gets right back to this same point. It really is a states' rights issue, and the only exception to that probably becomes when it is national security that's involved, which federal government's primary responsibility is national security to defend our borders for us. And that's where you blur that line with this kind of stuff right here. Because many of these provisions are based on national security concerns.
Some of them are.
And some are not.
And some are not. Right. And the ones that are appropriately so, because the states all, you know, cooperate in order to, you know, protect us all. I always hearken back to our state motto when we deal with issues like this.
Which one?
you could actually use either, but the more recent one that strikes at the real maverick independence of Oregon, and she flies on her own wings, and how quickly and unfortunately we fold those wings and go to nest when a big check from the federal government comes knocking. And certainly you two don't have to comment on any of this, but this is an issue that I just hope that we always evaluate when we're faced with this kind of a proposition by the federal government. I'm done now, Mr. Chair.
those are excellent thoughts. Tom, I stepped down the hall. Did you have further testimony?
Chair, I really did not. I'm really going to answer any questions you might have.
We answered some questions.
Okay. I'd move, Mr. Chair, that we pass House Bill 2107 on to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Right now we're in a public hearing.
I'm sorry, and switch and then I'll give
you the motion. We're going to do, we're going to go to work session on this at a future date. We're going to hold the public hearing today, wrap that up, and be prepared after leadership works through some issues with the Department of Transportation.
I apologize for jumping the gun, Mr.
Chair. I think you're exactly right. House Bill 2107 is an important piece of legislation.
Great bill, and should pass.
Yeah. Soon. So we just need to work through some technical stuff with leadership. So with that, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2107, and seeing no other business before us today, we're going to adjourn.
Thank you.